Continuing in mitzvah, Tav Chav Gimel, 423, the mitzvah of mezuzah. Midine ha-mitzvah, what are the halachas of a mezuzah? Masha Amar Zichronim Levracha, Shishtei Parshiyos Eilu Ma'akvo Zo Ezo. That if you don't have all the letters correctly written in a mezuzah, the mezuzah is puzzle, which is why we have to check the mezuzah. That mezuzahs have a tendency, or at least in the olden days, they had a tendency to rot and fade. So, therefore, we have to check them to make sure that they are still good. If they are not, if all the letters are not there, then you have a problem. Afilu ksav echad ma'akvan, even one letter, yeah?
A question. I seem to remember years ago, back in the days when mezuzahs were tiny and they're low, and you had big problems. You worried about Arabs writing or something like that. But they.
You should still be worried about that.
You should worry about that, okay. But something about how cheap mezuzahs would have like some kind of a white coating put on the cloth.
Yeah, that's called.
Which then would peel off, and the letters would come. Is that what's the
right? That could it makes the letters more easily crackable. But there's another problem that people hold it's puzzle anyway, because there's something called klaf mashuach. So klaf mashuach means that you take a lime paste and you smear it on the cloth and makes it perfectly even and smooth and very easy to write on. So this was a problem with a lot of Sephardi mezuzahs especially, and still in Sefer Torah you see them around. So there's a whole shaila as to whether the thing that you smeared on the cloth was a chatzitza, was a barrier between the writing and the cloth. So some people said, yeah, it's a barrier. The cloth has to be written on... Not so straightforward. Most Ashkenazi poskim were at least choshes for that, but a lot of the Sephardi poskim were dealing with their own mezuzahs held that no, it's called kolin naoso eino chotzei. So there's a rule in halacha that when something is designed to make something more beautiful, so it's not a chatzitza. That's why, by a lulav, that the binding of the lulav is designed to make the lulav more beautiful, so therefore it's not a chatzitza between the lulav and your hand. You have this whole koshikal thing, and what do you mean? You're not holding the lulav, you're holding it. No, it's designed to make the lulav more beautiful, so it's not a chatzitza. So other poskim said, well, it makes it easier to write. It doesn't make the cloth more beautiful, necessarily.
It's white, though.
Also, maybe it is more beautiful, but nevertheless, it's this klaf mashuach business is not really used anymore. But you still see older Sefer Torah with this klaf mashuach. Yeah.
Why do the mezuzahs have to be written by hand? Why can't they be printed?
Uchsav tam. It says they have to write them.
Can't you silk screen them like they did with the Sefer Torah?
It's a silk screening.
Just to have the words that you want on the mezuzah. I don't know.
No, there are rules. Not just to have the words that you want. Just like you can't just write it on the doorpost, and just like it has to be written on klaf. So it has to be written with ink. So part of the rule is that it has to be written. That it can't be. This is a very well established in halacha. This is by a get also. It has to be written. It can't be. So
the good news is it actually says that. This is not one of these cases where 24 provisions down the road.
It could very easily interpret the other way. It has to be written, whether you do it by hand.
That's what it says.
You will write. It's not going to say, and it shall be printed on your doorpost or something like that.
Right, so some postgame held that the old printing press, where you actually, you had things, the letters, movable type that was dipped in ink, and then you by hand. So some postgame held that was considered writing, but the problem with that for a mezuzah is that you have the rule of kesidron, that the rules of that each letter of the mezuzah has to be written in order. So you have to write shin, mem, ayin. You can't write shin, ayin, and go back to the mem.
So what is that going to
be? So that means that if you press it at the same time with a printing press, it's no good, because all the letters are written...
You could stamp it then in that theory.
In that theory, you could you press yes.
Or,
yes.
Or silk screen, that's all this, right?
So silk screen, you would have to do one letter at a time, so that defeats the purpose.
That's true of a Sefer Torah, remember you said, right?
Not true. No, so the Sefer Torah doesn't have to be written in order, no. So that's why some people have come up with this idea that you would write a Sefer Torah by a silk screen. How does it work? You have a piece of material, and you have tiny little holes in the material in the shape of letters, and where there's not supposed to be letters, so the material is solid. So you take a squeegee, and you dump ink over the whole silk thing, and then you take a squeegee and you go, so that forms all the letters. So is that considered a writing? So that's a big shiloh, but that's considered writing in halacha. So I think Shem Hashem, they do by hand. So first of all, there are a lot of problems. So first of all, the whole thing is supposed to be with some sort of kavana. Shem Hashem has a greater level of kavana. But if you don't know at all what you're writing, that's a problem.
Kavana is important in this case too.
Yeah, you have to have kavana for writing. That's why Sofer, while he's writing, is really not supposed to listen to shiurim. So this happens sometimes. If Sofer listens to shiurim, it's boring. You write the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Yeah. But nevertheless, you're not really supposed to listen to shiurim when you're writing stam. So most poskim do not accept the silk screen method is considered writing, partially based on a Yerushalmi. Rav Yoshev famously quoted Yerushalmi that says that when it says v'chosav, that when you have to write, and this is referring to a get really, v'chosav l'sefer krisos, that when you write a get, it says v'chosav elo v'shofach. You're not allowed to just spill ink in the right form. You have to actually take a pen and write the letters. That's why he felt the silk screening is completely problematic, and that's the vast majority opinion of the contemporary poskim, that silk screening is really a puzzle. So my einfall with this is, so like we were talking about with the Sifra Daftarta, that the Haftorah scroll, so where we're already relying on the idea that you can recite the Haftorah orally, by memory, because our laser-printed Svarim are for sure not considered written. So it couldn't be worse to use a silk-screened Haftorah scroll, so it would be cheaper. So let's say maybe that instead of we're doing things where you really make your adin need something, absolutely, according to all Shittos, need something written, like a Sefer Torah. So at least maybe they should just limit themselves to silk-screening Navi scrolls, where it's only a chumrah, if you could call it that, to use an actual scroll.
And it would happen in Kudos.
It could have the kudos also. Yeah.
I mean, and when it doesn't, then obviously the burden is on Mordechai. Or
right. I believe he's up to the task, but...
Aryeh does it, but the truth is that he stumbles more.
Yeah,
I
sure.
I mean, he does very nicely, but...
Right, like I said, it can't be worse. I don't know if it's a kosher scroll, but it doesn't, you know, can't be worse than what we're using now. So maybe we should get a silk-screened Haftorah scroll. But for mezuzahs, it for sure would be problematic, unless maybe you would manage to control it so that each letter is written one after the other. But again, this is the vast majority of posts can completely reject the idea of the silk screening.
With the scroll, how do they would it work where you have like Haftorahs where they take sections from different...
Yes, you write the different sections.
Yeah, you can customize it. So you don't have to sit there and look at Ashkenazim do this.
You wouldn't have to roll to go to...
If you're using a full Navi scroll, then you have to roll. Uh-huh. The most ideal way to say the Haftorah is from a full Navi scroll. That's the way they do it in a lot of yeshivas, even here in YU. And in Lakewood, a lot of shuls have...
They
do out of a full Navi scroll.
So then
you have to take out two scrolls, back. And you have to go back. Sefer Yeshayahu, written on cloth, the same way as the Sefer Torah.
Not all the Nevi'im on cloth.
Not altogether, it would be huge.
12, right.
Yeah, sometimes this Treyasar usually would be on one scroll. So you could put two or three books together in one scroll. Sometimes you have Shmuel and Melachim, or Yechezkel Treyasar.
Bracious and
Shmos, that has the status of a Chumash. You could do that.
Yeah.
If you just had a scroll with Bracious and Shmos, not the rest of the Chumash, that would be permissible. That wouldn't have Kedusha Sefer Torah. Mm-hmm. A Navi scroll, we know for sure the Gemara sanctions the use of a Haftorah scroll. That even if it's not as ideal as a Navi scroll, but it would be much, much better than what we're doing now with a laser printed book, which is not so punched at all. Kilomar, afilu os achas she'ena asuya kahogen. Even if there's one letter in a mezuzah that's not written properly, the mezuzah is puzzle. Kilomar she'en gvil makif osa me'arba ruchosa. There's a rule that in stam the letters cannot touch each other; they all have to be surrounded by klaf. That's our gvil. If you're using gvil, that they all have to be surrounded by parchment on all four sides, and they cannot touch each other. If they touch each other, it's puzzle, and they would have to be separated with a razor. Yeah.
Wait a second. But if you have, say, two letters that touch each other,
written
so they touch each other,
But
then you go back and you separate them, then isn't that a problem for, like, which letter is done in order?
No, because as long as the first... first of all, you're only allowed to separate two letters that are touching if the two letters are clearly distinct.
Yeah.
It's clearly recognizable that it's a mem and an ayin, there's just a little connection between the two, then you're allowed... So there the mem was written first, and the ayin was written second. Mm-hmm. And they just happened to touch while they were being written or after they were being written, whatever, so it's clearly recognizable. if the letter, two letters touch each other to the extent that they are not recognizable as distinct letters anymore, they just look like a, you know, a mush, or even, you know, two Zions touch each other and now it looks like a Ches, then you're, if you separate the letters, then that's not necessarily an issue of Kesidron per se, but it's an issue of Chaktochos, that there's a rule that the letter has to be written. That's part of what we learn out from a get. It says V'chosav la'sefer krisus, that you have to write a get in your velo v'chokak. You're not allowed to carve out a get. So that means that, for example, this doesn't work for a mezuzah, obviously, which has to be written on gvil klaf or duchsustos, but for a get, you can theoretically write it on a metal plate, a tas shel mateches, that if you take a metal plate and you punch out the letters, then that's kosher, that's considered ksiva. But if you punch out the surroundings of the letters, and the more form of the letter, the action wasn't done on the letter itself, but on the surroundings of the letter, that's called chaktochos. So we extend that to, if you're writing with an, even with an ink on a surface, that if you scratch out the ink, if to form the letter by scratching out the outside of the letter, rather by doing something with the actual form of the letter, then that's also puzzle.
That's puzzle.
Yeah.
Wait a second. Could you take, for example, something which would be equivalent to like a typewriter, where you have basically, you have each letter would have a punch, you know, an olive, and go boom like that, then you go like, you know, like this, and for the get. Would that work for a get?
Maker Adin? I think so. I think that would work. Maker Adin, it would work. Again, we're very conservative when it comes to Gittin. We don't we don't change these things.
Be typed on a computer?
No, not because that's not my Siksiva. That's type it on the computer, and the computer prints it out with a laser printer.
Manual typewriter, maybe. How's that? That's
no, it's the manual typewriter. Yeah. So according to the sheet, that dvus, that printing is considered ksav. Here, a letter is really done one by one with human action. So according to that sheet, so seemingly it would be okay. Mm-hmm. I think I heard a story about that. Now that you mention it, that someone was doing that. Some outlier rabbi was actually doing Gittin with a typewriter, a manual typewriter. So someone went into Rav Moshe Feinstein and told him, you know, there's this this Rav who's doing Gittin with a typewriter. So Rav Moshe got so upset that anyone could do this, that they'd be writing Gittin with a typewriter, and it's terrible, and a pirza, and he's going to Gehenna, and he can never do enough tshuva for this, and it's awful, and it's no good. And So after Rav Moshe went on this, you know, his rant for a while, he wasn't prone to rants. I'm sure it was calmer. Right. Yeah, no, he's a very calm person, but he apparently got very upset about this. Maybe I'm overdoing it, but he got it. Whatever was in character for him, so he got very upset. So the so after he calmed down, so the questioner said, "Okay, new Rosh Hashiva, I understand that you shouldn't do it, and it's very upsetting. But lemaisa, you know, meikar adin, what's the real halachic psul here?" So Moshe said, "Probably nothing." But we don't go by this. By Gittin, we're very, very, very conservative. They're really silly things. That with Gittin, that so we're makbid to write it in a ksav that's similar to the Sefer Torah script, and not only that, but we're makbid that the Edim have to sign also in Sefer Torah script.
Oh.
So many of sometimes there are situations where experienced Edim are not available, so you have to take rookies and train them how to write their name in Sefer Torah script with a quill. So, and it's very difficult. They do a terrible job. They create major. We don't give a get if it's a really problematic. But they create issues with signing of their name. So once or twice, I said to the Masader Aget, I said, "Why don't you just let them use a calligraphy pen, a felt calligraphy pen, to do it instead of a quill? They do a much better job. What's the problem? There's really no halachic problem with using that whatsoever, but." We just don't change. We use a quill. That's what we use for Gittin. And even the Edim have to sign with a quill. So that's we certainly don't use a typewriter. Yeah.
You don't have to ask whether you need a quill or you can use it like a...
Yeah, no. It's the quill is not necessary. A quill is just with the technology that they had in Europe. The Gemara talks about using a reed. They didn't use animal bird quills at all. So in Europe, they used to use goose quills. It actually happens to write much more nicely, much sharper than a reed. So that's why from nowadays prefer quills. But nowadays people use turkey quills because geese are not as common, and the turkey quills are bigger and more gesund.
But turkeys, though, what about, there's no basara for that, right?
So, Maker Adin, the kolmus, the quill doesn't need to, the pen that you use doesn't need to be made from something kosher. Mm-hmm. There's a chumrah like that, not to use from a non-kosher bird, but Azoy Vait, to be machmer on the turkey, so as not to use their quill.
Yeah.
I've never, haven't heard of such a thing, yeah.
There's such precise specifications for...
So that is a little bit dangerous by a mezuzah, to write the outline of each letter, because we really hold that an outlined letter is kosher. That's why at the end of a Sefer Torah, when you write the, when the sofer leaves certain letters just as an outline, and then you have people come in and fill them, the reason that we're mikel on that is because we really hold that the letter was kosher already. And now the person who's coming up to fill it is, even if they mess up somehow, so it's not going to, under normal circumstances, I guess it's possible they could, but they're not going to passel the letter because it was already kosher before. But so by a mezuzah, you don't...
By a get, means the rookies wouldn't know how to make the letters.
Oh, you want to do that for the Eidim by a get. Yeah, oh, not by a mezuzah.
Outline of the letter, and then...
No, because that means you wrote their name already.
Yeah.
No, so the Gemara talks about maybe making a stencil, like an outline. Not an outline that you write on the paper.
And that's all right?
Yeah,
stencil?
Yeah, yeah. To cut like a paper and then put it over the place I was supposed to write the name, and then they fill it in, yeah.
Well, okay, so you obviously can't have a rookie, you know, just take a blank piece of paper, and finally when he gets the signature right, then you go ahead and you put the get over it, right? Like, you get it to be...
Oh, for sure, of course. It's not like a blank check, no. The witnesses have to sign after, of course. The witnesses have to sign after. He can practice.
Uh-huh.
That's what they do. He says, usually when you have rookie witnesses, so while I'm writing the get, so you have I write the witness's name frame on the top of paper, and then he has to copy it. Copies it 20.
Right.
Copies 20 times. So it doesn't look exactly like mine, so it's still recognizable as his signature. So when I first learned this, you know, years ago, before I was a sofer at all, that the witnesses on a get are supposed to sign in the Sefer Torah Ksav, thinking to myself, what kind of a signature is that? Your signature is supposed to be identifiable as the signature of a particular person. It's identifiable, trust me. Even though they're writing a certain form of letters, everybody's looks different. It's completely completely identifiable as a certain signature.
You know, like say for Sefer Torah, you can see whose handwriting.
Right. I mean, there are people who are experts. There is someone that I know that I've worked with a couple times when just a panel or two of a Sefer Torah needed to be rewritten. Because it couldn't be repaired. So I know someone who's an expert in copying the writing of the other panels of the Sefer Torah, so it should match.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't say it's 100% perfect, but it does a pretty good job most of the time.
So you have handwriting experts, and you have Paul in front of Bate Denim for Hebrew,
Usually don't need a handwriting expert. Usually it's usually a particular pool of witnesses so that whose signature is whose.
But a get has to be written the entire thing for that specific person, or you could leave the name blank and have like copies, and then when the person comes, you just fill in the name.
So, according to the very strict letter of the law, according to Moshitas, you could do that. You could write everything in the get besides the names and the date and the location, and then fill them in. But the minhag nowadays is not to do that. To make sure that people don't just write the get in advance, and all with the entire get is written on the spot. It's tedious, but it makes people wait longer. Also, so that's not good. That's part of the reason that nowadays misadri gittim are very focused on the speed of the sofer, because in the olden days people were less sensitive. So a get used to take a few hours usually. And everything was done slowly, and the sofers, but nowadays the people are very nervous. They probably underwent, they're in the middle of a civil divorce. They might be acrimonious. They might not want to sit in the same room, so we try to get it done as fast as possible.
But then you make mistakes. Good writing. You make mistakes, inevitably. I mean, proofreading must be
The get is proofread several times. It's supposed to be read over by the sofer, and it's supposed to be read over by the mesader before the eidim sign. It's read over by the eidim before they sign, and then it's read over again by the mesader and the eidim after the eidim sign again.
There will still be mistakes. Always. I mean, not in every case, but there's still going to be things that slip through.
I mean, in theory, there can be mistakes even if a get took 3 hours.
Right.
But the truth is it's pretty rare And there are mistakes that are found at certain points in the process, but it's quite rare to find something that actually puzzles the get to the extent that it would really be a puzzle.
Actually, yeah. How long is a get? How many words are really?
How many words? I mean, it depends on how long the names of the.
Outside of the names, obviously, the
Is there a certain nusach for it, or it's just the?
According to the strict halacha, no. The get could be written in any language, and as long as it conveys the idea of divorce, then it would be kosher. But nowadays, there is a set nusach for it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So actually, get should be comprehensible though to the actual parties. No,
doesn't have to be.
Okay, all right.
Such halacha.
All right. Okay.
Just like super isn't comprehensible.
No, you explain more or less what it means. Like in the Ksuba, the Mesader Kiddushin is supposed to go over the Ksuba and explain basically what he's signing up for.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, sure, they did. Sure.
They did? No, they did. Not me.
Okay, you don't have to translate it word by word, but you have to. The Chassan has to understand what he's getting himself into.
Yeah.
And he'll now walk around you for the. You will be.
No. That was the Kesuba.
Never mind. That was his explanation.
Why is the Kesuba in Aramaic and not in Hebrew?
That was the language of legal documents in the times of Chazal, or mostly in Aramaic. Again, the Ksuba doesn't have to be in Aramaic either. The Ksuba, of course, could also be in English. But again, even for that, we have a traditional nusach.
So, but the idea that you don't have to understand what it says to sign it, this seems...
The Adim have to understand it.
So you could have this whole business about if somebody's mutant, if somebody's deaf, and all this doesn't apply.
Right.
That applies if with someone, a sota. I mean, I remember this endless discussion about how...
So someone's mute
has to understand every word and, how, uh-huh. and then other things they have to reply and they get you have to reply. No?
So no, I mean the basic formula of a get procedure is that the husband just says takes an aid and says takes a sofer and says write a get and deliver it to my wife and then he can leave.
Mm-hmm.
That's the minimal, the procedure nowadays takes longer. They've included more stuff and they want the husband to be there the whole time lechatchila, but you know, as long as he understands that this document is affecting a divorce,
and she understands.
Yes, of course, and she understands that when she receives it, then it's affecting a divorce. That's sufficient. They don't have to be able to translate the Aramaic of each individual line. Okay, so the mezuzah, mash amru shechiva mezuzah lanicha bemezuzah sapesach miyamin, that you have to put it on the right side of the doorpost. Shnemar Beisecha. It says, your house, Mefarshil Rabbanan Biascha. It has to be the way you come into the house. And what's the way you come into the house? You put your right side in first. V'chi Akar Inish Ragli Diamina Akar Bereisha. When you start walking, you're standing still and you start walking. So most right-footed people, most mm-hmm. people are both right-handed and right-footed, even though you might not have thought about it because you don't use your foot for fine tasks the same way you use your hands. So you start walking with your right foot. You use your right foot to kick a ball, etc. This comes into play also with chalitza.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a chalitza. So the chalitza is done on the brother-in-law's dominant foot. So if you have to determine whether he's right-footed or left-footed. So if he's right-footed, so then you do it on the right foot. And if you do it on the if he's left-footed, so you do it on the left foot. But also, even though we're not 100% sure that that's really correct, so we do it for a left-footed person, you do it on both feet. On the right, chalitza is also, we'll get there a few minutes from now, but it's a very uncomfortable ceremony when it has to happen. Okay. So even if you're left-footed, it doesn't go by that for your mezuzah. The mezuzah always goes on the right side. So how do you determine the right side? That's also a problem. In the olden days, maybe it was...
The correct side.
No. The right side.
Right, yeah.
I mean, how do you determine?
Right.
Because there could be...
entering the room.
Yeah.
Oh, I found a room.
You could have a... If your apartment...
Yes.
So if you have an apartment that has a straight hallway and just rooms branching off on each side of the hallway, then you know. But if you have like a maze and you have, you go into a kitchen and the kitchen goes into the dining room, and then there's a living room next to that. So which is the main way? To go to the kitchen? You go through from the kitchen through the dining room to the living room? Is that the way? Or you go from the other way? So this is often a shaila that when you move into a new house, sometimes you bring the rabbi, and the rabbi walks through the house and tells you where to put all the mezuzahs. A lot of times there are disagreements about it. There are so many shitas about these things. The Gemara is pretty concise about all these things about mezuzahs, so it's blown up into so many different opinions that even if you do it wrong, so there's likely going to be someone who says to do it that way. But you should still still consult to figure out the normative halachic practice. What do our sages tell us? It also gates, not just houses. Echot shari batim chatzeros medinos sayaros refes luin matbein otzros yain otzros shemen kulan chel mezuzah. All these places are required to have a mezuzah. The gates of a house or courtyards or large cities or small cities, assuming it's a walled city, and a place where cattle live and a chicken coop and a place where you keep straw and a place where you keep wine and a place where you keep oil.
All kinds of mezuzah. They live in those places. Cattle pen or something?
You go there. You go there and you deal with your needs there. Isn't that, again, if it's literally only a place where animals live, then you're right, it's exempt. But even if the main usage is for that, but it's also part of your house and you have your own usages there. Also, I don't understand why you're asking a question about the oats or yain, the wine cellar. That's where people spend most of their time, I think. You know, of course it's chayv mezuzah.
Okay, say in some place like New Square, where they have actually a real wall around, I think I was told, actually, they're probably the best, mechitzas of any...
What, Eruv?
Yeah. Right, but then where they have to let the ambulances in on Shabbos, they have to have mezuzah, I assume, then, right?
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
But if you have a storage house, you rent a storage and you keep
that's not chayv.
Your groceries in there, whatever.
If you rent a storage unit, no, that's not chayv. If it's used literally only for storage, you never spend any time in there. That's not chayv.
So what does it mean, otros, yain?
It means that you spend some time there also. I mean, the main usage is for these things, but it also is a part of your dwelling space.
Like a pantry or something like that. You store things in there, but you're always going in there to get the...
Yeah, it's probably like
a jar of jam or whatever it might be out of.
100%, yes. So a pantry is chayv. If it's the proper size. If it's a tiny closet, then it's not chayv.
What is tiny?
4x4 amos. We'll get there. Tan Rabbana, Yochol Chani Marbe Beisharach Sadro Mir Peses. Maybe I would include a gateway, like a little room that serves as a gateway to something else. Again, that seems to mean something, a gateway area that doesn't lead directly into a place where people live. It leads directly to a place where people live, then it is chayev. So some people, it's funny because some people want their mezuzah on the front door to be the most mehudar mezuzah in the house. Whereas a lot of time, the front door is actually a chayev and mezuzah on a lower level. Because sometimes it opens into like a little foyer that's less than the proper size. So you do have to put a mezuzah because it's like a beishar, that it's like an entrance way into something else. But it's not; it doesn't have the same level of chiyuv as other places. So you should really reserve the more mehudar mezuzahs for more places that are more likely to really be chayev. So a place that's just like an enclosed courtyard without a roof they don't really live in, and a porch, again, the porch in our houses might be different, but like a porch they don't use is not a chayev. Tamalom or bayis, it has to be a house. Ma bayis miyuchad ledira, af kol shem miyuchad in ledira. It has to be a place where people live. V'yotzu elu yochol shani marba beis akisei beis amerchas beis tzvila. So people live in these places more than anywhere else, maybe. You spend a lot of time in a bathroom and a shower room and a mikvah. People don't spend so much time in a mikvah, but it could be potentially a place where people hang out. So tamalomar bayis. No, it has to be bay ma bayis asui lekavod af kol asui lekavod. So one of the criteria of a place that's chayiv mezuzah has to be a place for an honorable purpose. If it's for a dishonorable purpose, so then you don't have to put a mezuzah there. That's why you do not put a mezuzah on a bathroom.
It was honorable.
What?
That got to do with honorable.
Mm-hmm. These are mitzvahs. You fulfill mitzvahs when you go. When you're supposed to go to the bathroom, you go to the bathroom. When you're supposed to go to the mikvah, you go to the mikvah. Mm-hmm. But it's still the functions of the place are not high level of. I don't know how to describe it in English. The way I described it really isn't accurate.
Actually, doesn't the mikvah here have a mezuzah facing Broadway
on the outer door? Because that's going into the room where the attendant sits. So, but the doors of the actual, the where the pools are, or certainly the bathrooms, the preparation rooms, is not nachayv mezuzah. Yeah. V'yatzu elu yochol shani mar behar habayis vel shachos azoros. What about the Beis HaMikdash? Maybe the Beis HaMikdash should need a mezuzah. Tamilomer bayis ma bayis shuchol afkol. Shuchol has to be for a regular non-holy purpose. But if the room serves only a holy purpose, then it's a putter.
The way, how in shuls and
they really are putter. Yatsu elu shein kodesh. That's why you don't, certainly don't make a bracha on a mezuzah that you put up in the shul, even if you want to be machmir, for what it's worth. So a shul where nobody lives is not chayev in mezuzah. So nevertheless, nowadays people spend more time in shul. You have the kiddush, you have people learning there, you have people taking naps there maybe. So the minhag nowadays is that a base knesses and a base medrash even more because people spend mamish the whole day there. The minhag is to put a mezuzah, but without a bracha. Yeah.
I think I saw that on Nick's door, there's a mezuzah. You remember that?
A double chumrah because it's a shaila. Even in a private home, if you have a non-Jewish servant or maid, so do you have to put a mezuzah on that door? So that is a issue in contemporary poskim that they disagree about this point. But here, it's even worse. You certainly wouldn't need for Nick's door because it's not a the whole instant. This is not a private place. Really, the whole building maybe is pater from mezuzah according to many shittas. So
right. I mean,
we'll notice when we walk out.
This thing, basically, what if you have, let's say, a regular bedroom, but
yeah,
and person uses also as a commode, right? Using it also.
No. You mean like a bedside commode?
Yeah,
like
chamber pots, right. You know, the old days,
So basically, is living there, it's a...
Right, so that's an ancillary usage of the room. It has to be that the room is designated for something, not mechubad. But if a person, you know, doesn't mean sometimes...
Bedridden or something.
Right, bedridden or...
Can't get to bed. Can I get into the bed? Whatever.
Right, so that's why... There's also a discussion about a room that's exclusively used by a married couple. So that's very mechubad. You could say that's mechubad, it's a mitzvah. But nevertheless, there are shitas that say a room that's designated specifically for a married couple is not chayev. We assume it is chayev also because nowadays we have a door separating the room from the mezuzah. So that would for sure be okay. For sure you should
put like a mezuzah. The door opens in and then you have like the outer door
plan. Right, right.
It's actually
right.
Outside. Oh,
right.
Right. It's
right.
Actually not inside the room. It's on the...
All right. Mm-hmm.
What if there's a small room off your bedroom, which is only used by the maid, and the maid is not Jewish?
That's the same shilas. That's a big issue in contemporary poskim. Disagree about that.
Uh-huh.
So a base medrash also because people spend the whole day there. There's a cute story that the Maharam Mirotenberg, the Rebbe of the Rush, said he once put up a mezuzah on his base medrash. So they said, why are you putting a mezuzah on base medrash? It's putter. He says, because I take my daily nap there. And I used to not have a mezuzah, but I was disturbed in my sleep. There were evil, you know, spirits bothering me during my sleep. So I realized that the point was I have to put a mezuzah. Now they put a mezuzah. I sleep peacefully in my afternoon nap. Yeah.
But you're not allowed to sleep in a base medrash.
A little nap you are.
Oh.
That's what you could call it, a base nap. A base nap. When you just, you don't lie down, but you, you know, either you go like that or you...
If we're allowed to sleep in shul, then a lot of rabbis have a big problem during the drasha.
Shul is actually more stringent regarding these things. Again, maybe a slightly dozing off is okay, but a Beis HaKnesses, you're not allowed to eat or drink in a Beis HaKnesses. Again, a place that has full Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, whereas you are allowed to eat and drink in a Beis Medrash because it says that it's like where the Talmidei Chachamim live. If they didn't allow them to eat there, then it would be Bittul Torah. You allow them to take a little snack and continue eating in the Beis Medrash. Otherwise, they would have to leave and they have their lunch and they go to a nice restaurant and it take an hour and a half for lunch break and it would just be Bittul Torah. That's why we allow eating in the Beis Medrash. That's why you'll never find a Chassidisha synagogue, shul, Beis HaKnesses. They never call their prayer places, a Beis HaKnesses, they call it a shtibel, or a Beis Medrash even, if it's bigger, but they never call it a Beis HaKnesses because they eat there.
Torah Tefillah Center is in our case.
That's what they call it, the Torah Tefillah Center, exactly. They have a lot of other things going on in this room. But Dafka did not want it to have Kiddushas Beis HaKnesses for that reason. And certainly the back room, we have our Kiddush there, so of course, we can't have full Kiddushas Kiddush Beis HaKnesses.
Wasn't Korach's, when he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, he said,
"Bayis moli svarim." Is a chayav mezuzah. Yeah.
So he was like saying it in a way that a rhetorical question.
He's, right.
He didn't expect. In other words, right. So is that it does need a mezuzah?
Yeah.
Seemingly.
Yeah. Sure.
So, but here we're saying it doesn't.
No, that's a Beis Medrash. If you have your living room and it's full of svarim,
no,
so of course it's chayav mezuzah.
Here, like a shul, like a.
But it doesn't have to do. It has nothing to do with whether the presence of svarim in the room. It has to do only with what the designated usage of the room.
You live in the living room, right? So
right. Fine. Avali miyesh ba dirakum basic nesses dichvarim de diary ba orchin chayeves. So sometime in the olden days, the shul would be served as like a little inn. That there would be a room off the shul, and people would, from out of town that didn't have a place to stay, would stay in the shul. So that is chayav in mezuzah. That's also why you make kiddush in shul, because it used to serve as a little guest house. That the minhag of making kiddush in shul originally started because it was in order to make kiddush on behalf of all the guests who were dining in the shul. They just found it easier. They just made it in the shul, and then they went to the side room and had their meal. Is that what it really means? Kiddush Makom Suda. Okay, whole discussion. Why should we still do it nowadays? Also a good question. Umasha Amru Shemezuzas Yochid Nivdekes Pamayim B'Shavua, that the individual mezuzah is checked twice in 7 years. B'Shal Rabim Pamayim B'Yovel. Communal mezuzah, like the one in the old city of Yerushalayim, should be checked twice in 50 years. The assumption being that midah raisa, on a biblical level, once a mezuzah has a chezkas kashrus, then you don't have to check it at all. So the din of checking it is only the Rabbanan. So the Chachamim impose different standards for checking it in an individual, which is easier as opposed to a communal mezuzah, like you're talking about with the trying to repair the wall of an apartment building in Yerushalayim. You have to get everyone together to check it. So that's only possible twice in 50 years, not possible twice in 7 years. The little crowns and the letters. Amarava Shiva Osio Sheba Mezuzah Tzrichin Shlosha Zionim. They need little zions on the top of the letter. Ve'eluhein Shatnez Getz. Kilomar Kolot Sheba Mezuzah Me'elu Tzricha Shlosha Tagin. So all the letters Shin Ayin Tes Nun Zion Gimel Tzadi in a mezuzah need these three crowns. It also implies that the Sefer Chinuch held that a Sefer Torah does not need these crowns, that the whole statement was only going on mezuzah. And we mentioned in a previous year of different pshatim and what the ziyunim are, whether they're really things that stick out of the letter or just like points coming out of the head of the letter. And the Rambam holds that not even this, it's only talking about particular letters in the mezuzah that you have for emphasis, like the shin of Shema, and the tes of Totafos and the Zion of Mezuzah, like they're really they're particularly emphatic letters, because they talk about the main subjects of the Mezuzah. The Gonecha, the Gimel, and the Nun need Tagin, but the Rambam holds that it's only particular letters of these in a Mezuzah and does not apply at all to Sefer Torah or Tefillin. Kiloma, okay. V'masha Amru Shasocher Bayis B'chutzal Aretz. If you rent a house in outside of Eretz Yisrael, v'hadar bepundak b'Eretz Yisrael, or if you live in Eretz Yisrael, poter min ha-mezuzah shloshim yom, that you're exempt from mezuzah for 30 days. But once you've stayed there for 30 days, then you're chayav in mezuzah. Yeah.
What happened for a college dorm? Because you're Shabbat.
It's chayav, yeah.
You're chayav, okay.
Sure, it's chayav. Uh-huh. Unless your roommate is a non-Jew, so then you maybe not.
But you're not. You're only allowed to live there as long as, you know, it's not like you were renting it, you know, on a regular lease, you know, like they always kick you out for something or other, you know,
At least a landlord could also kick you out if you violate your lease.
Yeah, okay.
That's where you live.
Yep.
That's where you live. It's, I think, a college dorm, assuming at least the majority of the people living in the room are Jewish, so then it really is chayav mezuzah. There are ways to do a mezuzah in a way that won't cause anyone, that you could use double-sided tape to put it up, and then when you take it off...
Oh, yeah, right. You know. Won't charge you for the nail holes. And
right, exactly.
Take it down once you move.
In this situation, in a college dorm, yes, because it's likely that the next people who live there are not going to treat it with a proper respect. But ordinarily, as the Sefer Chinuch will say, later you are not allowed, you're not supposed to take it with
but
you.
But YU puts up its own then?
Yeah, sure.
In all right,
the yeah, yeah. The mezuzah does not have to belong to you. If the room already has a mezuzah, so that's good. Well, maybe I don't think their mezuzahs are kosher. So maybe I should have taken their mezuzahs down and replaced it with my own. Okay, I never did that, but okay, it's good enough for this purpose, which is surely not not deraisa. Deraisa is only if you own the house. Okay, so
the whole requirement for mezuzahs is only for when you own.
If you're renting, it's only the rabbanon. Yeah, it's only if it's deraisa. It's only if you it's your own house. That's why many gedolim. Were makbid, many. You hear stories about certain gedolim were makbid that even if they lived in a rented apartment, they were makbid to buy one of the rooms. So they would at least have one room where they'd be chayiv and mezuzah. It could be a sale with a tanai that if they move out, they have to sell it back to the landlord. Okay. But this is a big shaila. So if you're renting, so you're only chayiv after 30 days. So the question is, are you allowed to put on the mezuzah beforehand? Is the shaila that comes up a lot.
Right, yeah.
So, on the... Well, I would have thought, just my intuition, which is not necessarily worth much, but what I've thought is what it means that you're not chayav mezuzah until 30 days. It means you move in the apartment, you see if it works for you, it's only rented, maybe you'll move out, maybe you'll continue the lease, maybe not continue the lease. Since it's less chamor, we give you a little more time to adjust. But if you want to put the mezuzah right away, go ahead. That's what I would have thought. But a lot of poskim say, no. Chazal say you're exempt for 30 days, and then from 30 days on, you're chayav. That means that you should not put the mezuzah until 30 days, because before 30 days, you get into a shayla of a bracha levatala. So a lot of people, when they move into a new apartment that's rented, they put up the mezuzah right away, because it's just easier to get everything done. And then when the 30th day comes, they take it down, and they put it back up with a bracha. Which is interesting. Intuitively, again, that seems like something too sticky about it, but I think that is the psak that I think Rav Schechter tells people to do that.
Even if you know you're going to be here longer?
Yeah. Yeah, again, the R sheet is the hold you're allowed to do right away, but...
If a mezuzah falls, you say bracha again?
You just say bracha again, yeah.
Or you take it off just because I want to paint the doorpost.
If you take it off and you put it back on right away, then you don't have to make a new bracha. But if it falls and you come home from work, then it's been down the whole day and you're putting it back on. It was real hesach hadas, like. Then you do make a new bracha. When you send them in to get checked and you've gone several hours or a day without the mezuzah, then you put them. Aval hasocher bayis beretz Yisrael. What about if you rent the house in Eretz Yisrael? Chayev mezuzah miyad, because you're supposed to live there. So where are you going? Why are you going? Why you're not supposed to be leaving? So even if you're renting, so you're chayev and have a mezuzah immediately. And the same thing here. If you purchase a house, you really have to put a mezuzah immediately. It can be very dicey. Let's say you buy a huge mansion in Teaneck and you have to buy 80 mezuzahs. So it's a problem. So the day you start moving your stuff in, you really start moving. You start moving into the house. You really have to put up all the mezuzahs immediately. V'hamaskir bayis lachaveru al hasocher lahavi mezuzah. That if a Jew rents to a Jew, it's the landlord's obligation to put up a mezuzah. V'likbosa dechovas. I'm sorry, hasocher. Not the landlord. It's of course, the chovas hadari. That's the famous. There's a famous sefer about mezuzah called Chovas Hadar. That it's derived from this phrase that Chazal used to describe the obligation of mezuzah, that the obligation is on the person who lives there and not on the person who owns the domicile. So if you build the house and nobody lives there and it's waiting for you to move in for 10 years, you just haven't gotten around to moving in yet, then you do not have to have a mezuzah unless you're living there. But if you rent it out, then the renter has to bring a mezuzah. So Yotze. And when your lease is up and you're leaving the apartment, lo yitlena biyado, or if you sell your house and somebody else is going to move in and buy it, you're not allowed to take the mezuzahs. Eli maisa bayis shel goy, unless you would assume that the next tenant would not be Jewish or would not be treat the mezuzahs with particular kovet. So this is an issue that you're not allowed to take the mezuzah with you. that, first of all, the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch, that doesn't mean you have to give it away free. Mm-hmm. That you're entitled to demand payment, if again, assuming this is all Jewish operation, that you're entitled to demand payment from your for your mezuzahs from the next tenants who move in or the next owners of the house. But if they don't want to pay for it, so you get into a shaila. So according, it depends how you learn this obligation. So some Rishonim write that the problem of taking the mezuzah is that it's like you're ripping God out of the house, that the God's presence has been in the house, and now you're taking it out, so now to do that. So you can make the argument that it means the person is required to pay for them when they move in, but if they refuse to pay, you're still not allowed to take it. But we don't normally assume like that. We assume that if the new owner or tenant of the house or apartment does not want to pay for the mezuzah, you are allowed to take it. Also, what a lot of people do, which is also a little bit of a shaila, but most poskim nowadays have accepted this, is before they leave, some people, again, if it's all simple mezuzahs anyway, it doesn't matter. But a lot of people, you know, let's say they are very machmir, very pious, and they bought all their mezuzahs for $150. So that's an extremely nice, gorgeous, beautiful mezuzah. And they don't want to give it to the next person, so they may not be as religious. So why should I give them maybe I can't even get them anymore. Maybe it's a sofer who died that I like the particular sofer, and I want his mezuzahs on my new house. So you the contemporary practice is that you're allowed to switch it, that you buy, mm-hmm. as long as it's 100% kosher, the new mezuzahs that you're buying, but simpler, cheaper, not as gorgeous mezuzahs, you switch them all, you take your the mezuzahs to which you're attached. You take them with you, and you leave the simpler mezuzahs for the next tenant.
Now, yeah. Now the batim don't have any particular kedusha. There's nothing about batim that has to be.
I mean, you have to put in geniza.
Huh?
You have to put them in geniza. It's called tashmishei kedusha. They serve. For a holy purpose, but no, you could definitely switch the. That's not a shaila at all.
That's what most people care about is the batim rather than the cloth.
Depends.
You know?
Yeah.
Give me the case.
Yeah, the case is right. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you have a really fancy, expensive silver case, yeah, for sure, then that's not a shaila at all. You'd be allowed to switch to a simple plastic case as long as the mezuzah remained on the door. Okay, we'll continue next time.